Welcome to Dee's Podcast. I'm Emily Harmon, and today Gwen isn't here. I'm actually in the Canaries, and I am at one of my favourite wineries, so I'm joined by...
Jonathan Garcia.
And we are at...
Suertes del Marqués.
So we're in Tenerife in the Canary Islands. So some of you already know some of the wines. I think Gwen and I have definitely posted about the wines and maybe brought them up on the podcast before. But I think... Yeah, I'm not able to obviously tell you as many interesting things as Jonathan would be about the wine. So, yeah, tell us a bit about the history of the winery, where we are exactly on the island as well, because it's quite, everybody kind of, depending on what holiday you might have had in Tenerife, you might have a different perception of the landscape, of your experience on the island and what's happening here.
Okay, so this is a family cellar that started in 2006. We started to produce wine in 2006, but my father started to be grower in the 86, but selling the grapes to other sellers in the Appalachian. And then the first winters, in 2005, my father decided to start to produce by ourselves, and 2006 was our first vintage. We are located in the Orotava Valley, it's the north side of Tenerife, Orotava Valley, Valle de Orotava, the translation. It's one of the five appellations of Tenerife. It's one of the places with more history making wines. The first vines were planted in the end of the 15th century. And so there's a long history behind the wines from Orotava Valley, from the Tenerife North, that many people didn't know yet. So I think now we are trying to show the people the heritage that we have, and also all the things that we can show to the world.
And I guess part of the wine growing history here, or the vine growing history, is kind of a mix of Spanish and Portuguese, right, in terms of grape varietals, just because of the way Tenerife was conquered, right?
That's the part of the history of Tenerife. Many of the population that established here in the north side of Tenerife and also in the island of La Palma were Portuguese. That's why we have a lot of different surnames that came from Portuguese families. For example, Pacheco, Carvalho, Lima, Luis, Brito. So many of them were established here when the distribution of lands after the conquest. And so we receive a lot of heritage from viticulture and grapes, obviously, from the Portuguese. So it's part of that. Also, many of the population, local population, still didn't know. They don't know that relation that we have with Portugal.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing that's sort of interesting for me, because I noticed that also in the food here, that you see some influence as well, right, in some of the dishes and cooking. They say that it has some Portuguese origins as well.
For example, the what we call here mojo, mojo is mojo, also that is the same word. So there were also some words like millo, that is corn, maíz in Spanish. So there were a few things that also came from that tradition in the 16th century from the Portuguese, mostly in the 16th century, because most of this family came first not for working in the vineyard, came for working the sugar cane. That was the main business in the first half of the 16th century. But then with the conquest, with America, with the developing the Caribbean cheap, faster of the sugar cane, the master of rum left this and continued with the wine business.
And thank God they did, because it's a pretty exciting place for wine.
Yeah.
And I think the thing as well that I found quite striking about when I came here the first time, which was 2 years ago, I actually came to visit Jonathan here in October 2018, was just like how different the north side is to the south side of the island. Like, I think many people come here on holiday and maybe spend time in the south because you said the beaches are a bit more relaxed and it's hotter. But for me, it was like the south side of the island looks a little bit like landing on the moon. And then you come over to the other side, it's like, where am I? I'm in this like tropical, like there's palm trees, there's flowers everywhere, it's super green, it's really luscious, it's colder, you feel the wind, the waves on the beach are pretty ferocious.
Yeah, I think this is one of the opportunities that has for everything Tenerife, that has two different islands in the same island. So the north is warmer, temperature is from 5 to 10 degrees higher, less rain, so the people that want to go to the beach also less strong waves than the north, so more playing places for big resorts. So that's the good thing that had the south, but the north has everything, all the history, all the old towns, all the viticulture, all the culture of the island is in the north side.
And at the moment we're actually sitting in the winery, we're in Suertes in the cellar, and we're located, so you said Orotava Valley, and it's kind of the mid part of the north, right? Like if you were looking at the map, it's almost halfway along on the north side of the island.
Yeah, it's small. You see the map, it's more or less in the middle, facing north, and we are in the middle way of the east and the west. The west will be Ico de los Vinos, Buenavista, Garachico, and the east will be going to La Laguna Santa Cruz.
Yeah. And soils here are pretty exciting. So most of our listeners and viewers will know that they're pretty excited about volcanic wines. So we talk a little bit about what is like specific here in your vineyards?
Yeah, because sometimes all people normally said this is a volcanic soil, but in between the volcanic soil there are a lot of different types, and there is the mother rock of basalt. Yep. And then if you go, for example, in the Orotava Valley, if you go to the west, it's more sandy, more soil, more basaltic rock in the close to the surface. If you go to the east, it's mainly clay, so you have a more rich soil. And then that's also part of the composition of the vineyard. We are in a small appellation, and then you see very clearly how the Listan Blanco is mostly planted in the west part, where the soils are poor, because it's a stronger vine. And then the Listan Negro, is a little bit weak, are planted from the middle to the east. And that's due to the experience of the growers during centuries, so that that soil much better works better for the Listan Blanco, and the other soil goes much better to Listan Negro. It's what now we know all in Burgundy and other parts, that the composition of the vineyard is different between if you are in one side or the other side. Also in a small place, 200 years ago, they start to plant only the grapes that are much better with the soil.
So just like, I mean, for anybody that, I guess for the sort of newbies that are listening, so all of the white grapes are mostly on the volcanic soil, a lot of the basalt soils is the white varietals, and the reds are on the mixture with the more clay inside, heavier soils. Yeah. But I mean, in terms of, so you said yourself, like you've got 20 varietals or something?
Yeah, mostly we work with 6-7 main grapes, but then we have in different parts experimental vineyards with a lot of different grapes, more than 20 different grapes.
Which is super exciting, because I mean, many of them I can't pronounce.
Yeah.
Or read. How do you say that? That's a bit tricky. Yeah. But there's lots of local grape varieties, which is fascinating for people to discover. Yeah. But I think the thing that, like, we've just spent some time walking around the vineyards here, just like the absolute monster vines you've got in the vineyards, not just because of their age, but because of the soil that they're planted on. Like, they're absolutely huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good segue into this wine.
Yeah.
But maybe you can talk a little bit about that, because I've never seen vineyards like this anywhere else.
Yeah, the Trenzado system that is amazing to see people that are involved in the wine business. And normally, when you see these long vines too old, it's fantastic. There are some vines that if you can't with several arms, because one vine can have two, three, four, five, six, seven different arms. And you can count more than 40 meters long, and then you see clearly how old can be this vine. Because for having an arm of 15 meters, you need a lot of years to make in that way in the Cordon Trenzado. And Cordon and Trenzado is the name of this wine. We make a drawing. This is the soil and how is the develop of the vine longer, so more or less it's more or less the new drawing that we made.
And trenzado literally translates as like a plait, right?
It's braided.
Like what braid. I have in my hair. Yeah. Which wasn't
when
planned.
When you braid something, and cordon is cordon. No?
Yeah. And I remember asking you this question on my first visit, the reason why that was done. And there were a few theories around why that started.
Yeah, I can say there are a few, but there's nothing exactly written about the origin. We thought that it's coming from the Malvasia, the aromatic Malvasia, the Malvasia de Candia, that was the main grape during the middle of the 16th century to more or less the first half of the 18th century, the popular grape here, that needs a long pruning. So this is a great system for the grape varieties that are not productive in the first parts. So that's why the evolution of this system here. Then we don't know if there was a grower here that they think about the making in this system, making longer for having more bunches instead of planting, or came from some place of Portugal and disappear, or maybe before the phylloxera, or with the phylloxera. So it's difficult. Then why continue with the next centuries with other grapes? Is due also is a productive system that is well adapted to a rich soil like here, and also in places that we have a limitation of space, like Valle de Orotava, they can move the arms and cultivate in the middle the gap that you have in the middle of the rows. You can plant other things like potatoes, like pumpkins, and other things. So they used to in that way. And other things that is very good, very useful for the west part of the valley is you find a lot of places with stones, basalt in the surface. So they plant in the fertile soil, and then they extend through the soil not fertile because it's full of rock. Instead of a round that they destroy with the dynamite, they jump that part and hang in, and they only plant in this part of the fertile soil and crossing the rocks over, and so they can have a quantity in that extension of land.
Yeah. No, it's super smart. I mean, they look amazing, and I really do like that one vine that we saw today in your vineyard where it had like five arms coming from it, and I said it looked like Davy Jones because it looked like a monster octopus that had come up from the depths, just like splayed out
sometimes
everywhere.
Sometimes it's like a snake with three heads, something that
it is a bit like that. Medusa's head.
Yeah.
A head with many snakes. Yeah. Yeah, amazing. It's worth just if anybody wants to get on Google and check out pictures of that. I mean, I'll tag in. On our Instagram account and on the YouTube page, and it'll also be in the footnotes of anybody listening to audio, some picture links so they can see pictures of the vines, because I think they're pretty fascinating. So I mean, I've already sort of started getting quite stuck into this, the first wine. So Trenzado, obviously, so we know the name is named after the cordon Trenzado, this braiding system. What can you tell us about this wine then?
We produce two different white wines. One is Trenzado and the other one is Bidonia. And Trenzado is coming from the west part of the valley. Those vineyards normally are more volcanic. And when I say volcanic, is that the basaltic is more close to the surface, it's more sandy. And then Bidonia is from the middle to the east vineyard, more mostly from the Suertes area, where the soil has more clay, is richer. So this is the difference between the vineyards, because on both has very old vines. So the difference is the composition of the soil. And then also the winemaking is the same. We work in Trenzado, it's mostly big volumes or foudres, so normally from 20 hectolitres to 45 hectolitres. And then the Bidonia normally is set in 2019 that they have to make also in a big foudre, because we don't have a big production, was not good for in yields the 19. Normally it's made in 500 liters barrels, smaller barrels, used barrels. So normally Trenzado has a more production. And so when I have something new that normally I don't try to have a new oak, but for having old oak, I prefer to make a new old by myself. I put in Trenzado because the impact of oak is going to be reduced in the blended because I have old oak. Yeah, and normally Bidonia is old oak.
So Trenzado is the one that, like, for people maybe starting off, like, maybe it's easier to find Trenzado, right? Because the volume's higher.
Yeah.
So for those, well, I'll put some links in anyway at the end of, like, where people can find the wines in their relevant markets.
Yeah.
Trenzado was the first wine that I tried, actually, out of all of your wines.
Yeah.
When it had the older green label on it.
Yeah, also what I said is that Trenzado Bidonia has a different level of prices, but it's not a matter of quality. It's a matter of that sometimes I make more production or less, and the price is that, but the quality could be the same or higher, depends of vintage, from Trenzado than Bidonia on the opposite. So it's not it's just a matter of soil than a quality status.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I adore this wine, just in terms of, I mean, I've recently been doing this by the glass at my restaurant in Berlin, and I think it opens up people's eyes, because everybody's quite curious about volcanic wine, and I think there definitely is like a fingerprint always of the soil, particularly in volcanic wine over any other terroir, which is why, for me, they're the most terroir-driven wines in the world, is wine from volcanic soil, because you can just feel that racy acidity on the side of your palate, that freshness that you don't necessarily always get from other soil types. Yeah. And I think an abundance of flavour, actually, like some of these grape varieties. I mean, I've tried Palomino in other parts of the world, and it's just like, it's almost uncomparable to how it is here on that specific soil. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, if you've got. For me, I am also one thing that sometimes is important in these soils, that the volcanic soils tend to make a little bit reductive wines, that is something that is common from the wines made from volcanic soil and with indigenous yeast that we don't avoid. So for me, volcanic soils work in good way. It has a great acidity. It's, also, you see that the combination of different type of soil, how you can find also elegance. It depends of the place, but for me, the things in the north side, because also depends of where in Canary Island, there are seven islands with different weather, different soils, and so the profile can change. But normally in the north side, you have a lot of freshness and an acidity in the wines made with the local grapes, or not only Lista Blanco, with all the local grapes.
I mean, I love the saltiness in this wine as well.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's for me.
This is 19. Kind of we are this in the 19. I like the evolution of this wine when it has after 8 to 10 months in bottle is when for me start to be in the best moment to see the potential that has this wine. Now is 5 months, I think. No, it's in June, 4 months.
Yeah, so you still think slightly closed and start to open up a bit more.
Yeah, but and then when start the spring, it's more or less this wine shows all the potential, all the mineral, the minerality that people don't like to use that word, but I don't know how to explain, because the Lista Blanco is not an aromatic grape in the north side of Tenerife. But then, for example, I'm making one Lista Blanco from the south face of Tenerife in the opposite valley by the Wimmer, and you see how the nose is much aromatic, being the same grape, but also it's my personal opinion that there could be more than 10 different clones of Lista Blanco also in the same valley. You see how the leaves of the west are smaller and with more stripe, less, and here is a little bit more open, more close to the Lista Negro.
Okay.
So also, all of us, we are saying that the Lista Blanco is the same grape, but it's not the Listan Blanco from Santiago del Teide, from Vilaflor, from Güímar, then from La Orotava, or from the center to the west of La Orotava. So maybe 10 kilometers is more. And imagine the Listan Blanco from Taganana, from a lot of center is planted there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even really think about the different clone types, to be honest, or the different types of Listan that would be here. And I guess because the vineyards here, which we haven't talked about, is everything's ungrafted.
Yeah.
So they're on their original roots and they're super old, like the ones you said here.
Yeah.
I mean, your youngest vines are what, like 80 or something?
100 years is normal to see. This is the average age is 100 years.
Yeah.
The normal new vineyards normally of Listan Blanco you don't see.
So you'd also think with ungrafted old vines that are planted widely throughout the island, it would make sense that there would be mutations or different clones or some evolution of what's happening there.
Yeah, this is continuing changing. I think that maybe in 60 years, let's see what could happen with the Listan Blanco that is planted in La Suerte, the one that is going to Vidonia. Maybe we will see a new grape. It's also, you see, with the Palomino Fino, the problem is that when we consider that in Palomino Fino is a whole grape and Listan Blanco is the Palomino Fino by the DNA, but then you see that there are changes in the same mutation, so I don't know how can say the people that study this, but the grape change are having mutation, having different clones. Also happened with the Garnacha from Navarra, that are studies that there are a lot of different clones, and all people are saying that in Spain this is Garnacha, but it's not the same from Gredos, that is in Navarra from the south or from the north. And
I mean, is anybody doing any ampelographical work? Like, is there like a little nursery anywhere in the Canaries, or not really, or is that just that we're growing through
them? Suppose that the most interesting studies are made in the University of Tarragona, Rovira Vigil, that they normally they take in the, and they were the ones that that saw that, for example, the Malvasia Rosada that we have here is a full indigenous grape from here, because had a mutation of color of the aromatic Malvasia, and also the grape that we didn't know it was Pedro Jiménez, the people call Pedro Jiménez, other ones in the same studies called Torrontés, and finally it's Torrontés Volcánico. It's a new grape that is not in other part of the world, so it's mutations, clones, or something. Mm. It's something totally new. And also there are in different studies that they didn't receive the name yet, because it's a no grape, so people also don't call it in any way. So there are still a lot of studies to do here. This is will be for the scientific people that for studying about wine growing for the vine viticulture. This is a place that will be amazing, because it's one of the most older that still have a lot of grapes. And we say that one of the advantages that we have when we have the gap of exportation, that when we finish in the beginning of 19th century to export the wine, they start to be not popular, the exportation, and to starting 10 years ago when start to grow again the exportation is to not be in contact with the market, because if we were continuing exporting in those centuries, in the beginning of 20th century, end of 19th century, maybe the phylloxera could come, and not only the phylloxera, also the, because we will plant also the vines from the typical of that moment, the Cabernet or Merlot Tempranillo, that they start to replace the indigenous grapes in the whole Europe. And because also one thing that the people say that is in the volcanic soil the phylloxera can have a develop, but you see there are some soils here in Canary Island that also can have the phylloxera a develop. Not all are sandy, not all full volcanic like Lanzarote or the sandy soil that you see here in some part, for example the north side of Tenerife, north side of La Palma,
clay soils.
You have a lot of clay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, we have the two advantages, that one of not having not farming the phylloxera, and also not go inside the fashion of those grapes that will replace all the indigenous grapes. And now we are in a good moment, because now the market is looking for indigenous grapes, something new, and we continue keeping.
And hopefully these unknown grapes that they haven't named yet are going to be something easy to pronounce for us non-Spanish, non-Canarian people. So we're not having complete anxiety panic attacks when we're at the wine shop trying to order them.
Let's see. I know that most of them are not easy to pronounce. This is Bidonia 19. Also, it's a vintage with shorter production than the 19 vintage in all the white grapes of Canary Islands. And this is it's made from Lisa Blanco from this area, from La Suertes area. It's around near the property.
So for everybody listening, we were just tasting the 2019 Trenzado before, and now we're on to the 2019 Bidonia. And this is my first time trying this, but this particular wine, Bidonia, is my favourite of the wines that you produce. Yeah. And I know that you produce more red than white, but I love this wine, and it's
it's my one of my favourite wines.
I think it's my favourite volcanic white wine. Yeah. Did I just say that? I just said that, but I think it is.
Yeah, maybe you tried the 19 and you don't like that. So listen.
Oh yeah, but I mean that consistently.
No, but normally it's all vintage used to be normally irregular. And there are good things that some ones have more volumes. I remember the 17 has a little bit more volume in mouth. The 16 and 18 more sharp, and this is in the middle way of the 18 and 17. So
yeah, there's some really lovely texture that I think is going to be there as well. Obviously, it still feels very young. But what I love about this wine is, you still have that lovely sort of bracing, salty acidity, but the integration of that acidity with the texture and the detail in the wine as well, like just the focus in this wine.
For me, sometimes I said that this Trenzado has a little bit more rustic character that is very good for the volcanic, that volcanic character, and Bidonia is the Listan Blanco, the elegant. So normally I try to define in the same grape how one is more wild, and Bidonia is the elegance of the grape.
And for me, so at the restaurant, I recommend this to people who want something. Like, this is the perfect table. A table of two, a couple. Somebody wants something classic, but somebody wants something a little bit different.
Yeah.
But they're like, I want it kind of natural, but I don't want it too funky. You know, there's these two polarities, and then you say, like, hang on, I'm going to give you this. I'm like, you want white, right? And you give them this, and they're like, yes. Both parties are really content with this wine, and I think that's what I love about it. It's for people who appreciate fine, more classic styles, but also for someone
more type of people, I think, that is more open public.
And it's a good blind wine to give to people, because they can't always work it out.
Yeah.
Well, I think when you give it to someone blind, they're not always 100%. Yeah, they're like racking their brains. Like,
sometimes people think that maybe could be something from Loire, from Chenin Blanc. Sometimes
More kind of Chablis.
Like Chablis, mostly Chablis. So it's nice for playing. In blind, the people that are like to play is a wine. And normally I think that those two grapes are the ones that in the blind tasting people say more Chenin or Chardonnay from a part from Burgundy, a little bit more sharp.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I guess that's one thing we haven't talked about. I mean, generally on juice we have a lot of natural wines, or I guess, well, I wouldn't say just natural wines, but we tend to gravitate towards producers that are working in a particular way in their vineyards. So it could be interesting for our listeners to know a little bit about how you work in the vineyards.
Yeah, we work in on organic. Everything is without any herbicide. We keep the spontaneous cover crop. So we have a lot of work here, because it is, we are in the west side of Tenerife, with volcanic soil, that normally the volcanic soil are very fertile, very rich, So when this soil has water, they grow very fast. So we spend a lot of time cutting. But for me, it's something that in the cordon trenzado, if you don't have a spontaneous cover crop, you can open the soil because you are not able to put any machine that can open mechanic.
I mean, even walking through your vineyards is still, it's a bit of a quest, to be honest.
So it's difficult, yeah. So it's impossible to put any for moving, and this is a natural way of opening the soil, and then the roots of this spontaneous crop are opening, giving air to the soil, and also is we have a lot of steep slopes, and also the water can be retained by the cover crop. So it's not what happened with the herbicide soils some growers do, is that they slide and you work in over it. It's like a concrete, it's like a cement working over it, and this one are more life soil. Also when you take one plant out and you see how all the insects are down moving in down the clay or the sun over under the sand, and for me it's great. It also gives a competition to the vines, so the ripeness, the acidity that we have in the bunches, yeah, are much better than when the plant has everything to only for the plant. And another thing, then all the treatments in the vines are under the ecological certification, so we don't use any systemic treatments. And then in the cellar, also because if you work in the vines organic, and then you use a lot of commercial yeast,
yeah,
and a lot
and
of
acidity,
things,
yeah.
A lot of things inside have no sense. There are a lot of certified cellars in the world, and then start to use yeast inside because it's allowed by the ecological one, is a certification, and so we follow also inside the cellar, but we add sulfur because for me, I still defend the use of sulfur in a short amount because for me it's part of protecting my vineyard, the exactly place where it's coming, and also you can really sometimes shows a little bit more the character of the grape. So that's my opinion, but always in short amounts. But for me, for the moment, maybe if you ask
me.
No,
but I guess with the sulfur use anyway, you wouldn't need to use a large amount because the pH in the wines would anyway be so low here, right? Like actually the potential for bacteria is quite low anyway in the wines.
But then there are some grapes that has a higher pH, for example, the Castellana Negra, what we call before Tintilla. So there are some grapes that has a higher pH. So you have to take care, but mostly yes. In most of the grapes, for example, our whites, when they don't make the Malolactic, the pH is 2.93, so it's very low. And the reds, Valistan Negro, the good great vineyards after Malolactic is 3.40, and the Bagos and Vicario that has a nice pH and acidity 3.30, 3.40 after Malolactic. So it's
still low.
So now 3.50 sometimes there are other vineyards, but normally the average is 3.50 in my wines because then 7.0 has a little bit higher, but always that is low. You go to maybe some.
It's funny the topic around sulfur though, isn't it? Because I mean, so it comes up at almost every single wine training I do. We get asked about it a lot on the podcast. They get asked about it a lot through Vina Lupa, and I still don't understand this sort of dogma around it, because it's just like, actually, unless you actually go into the science thing and have a full understanding of the science behind the wine and what those figures even mean, they're actually very meaningless numbers to many people. And for me, the only time I even consider sulfur as a buyer obviously it'd be different if I was a winemaker, because it is something you have to consider as a winemaker. But for me as a buyer, the only time I'm considering it is if there is clearly too much sulfur in a wine that's a fault. Yeah. And equally, if there is not enough, where there should be, and the wine is faulty because of that.
Both sides are, for me as a consumer, it's one of the phrases that I always say, that I consider me a wine consumer and then a wine producer. So for me, I agree that I don't like both sides. I don't like the sulfur side that is you smell and this is full of sulfur and it's a lot of headache. And then I don't like the part of zero sulfites added and the wine is not good. Obviously, if you find zero sulfite added, and there are a lot of producers that make great wines, and I appreciate these wines. For me, I think that it's not easy, and there are not so many producers in the world that make really well. But also, talking about, there are regions that are not easy to work in those way, and other ones that are easier by the grapes,
yes,
by the soils,
yes,
by the weather, by the humidity, by a lot of factors that are easier or less to work in zero sulfites added. I say zero sulfites added because of the wines, natural wines, always has sulfites of the fermentation.
Yeah.
So they say if you make an analytic, people say no, I have a zero sulfur of total. That's not true. At least has 10, 11, or 12 of total because it's the sulfites are made in the fermentation. That's
but they're also going down all the time as well, right?
Like, yeah.
I mean, and also it depends free, bound, everything. I mean, there's so much to talk about with that, but is it really interesting? I don't know, like that conversation could go on for hours, and what will we get out of it?
But I prefer one wine a little bit with some defects of zero added than 150 of total sulfur. For me, it's very difficult.
Yeah, it is. It is a challenge, and I'm especially now. I think there's a lot. We've still got a lot of education to do around understanding that. I think as buyers, as people who communicate around wine, because I know. Oh, it's natural. It's like, okay, yeah, but it's really mousy and it doesn't taste good and I don't want to drink it. But, yeah, that Vidonia, I've smashed for anybody who's on audio, which is many of our listeners, I've drunk my glass of wine already. Jonathan's being a little bit more conservative in his wine tasting
course.
Because
then after this tasting we have to taste...
Yeah, we have to taste more wine, so
40,
I need...
40 wines from the barrel, that's
why. Emily needs to just be careful with how much she's consuming. But so let's go on to the next wine then. So that's the two of the whites.
Yeah.
Two of the wines. So we're just pouring now. This is Sette Fuentes or Seven Fuentes. And the vintage is
18.
Okay, so 2018 Sette
Fuentes. The one
Fuentes.
That we are selling now. Yeah. So 18 is made of 90% of Listan Negro, 10% of Castellana Negra. When I say Castellana Negra, and you see all the labels of Seven Fuentes, will be what we call the Tintilla. So these are made of more than 25 different vineyards. I say 25, I can say 30, depends of vintage, because most of our growers vineyard, more or less 85%, 80% from growers, and the rest are from the property. This is a Vilas wine. Here we have a soil from 350 to 700 meters, orientation north, east, west, all the type of orientations. More sandy, more clay, so depends. And we have some wines, because I made all separate, and then I blend after 9 months. So there are some wines that has more fruit, other wines that are more mineral, more complex. And then this is the final result of the vintage, because for me it's also important that this wine is going to show how was the vintage in the area. And the aging is 60% in concrete, aging, rounded. and 40% in 500 liters barrels during 9 months.
And why the name Seven Fuentes, Sete Fuentes?
Seven Fuentes is a story that my father told me, that there were seven places. It's like a seven bars, but we have to return 60 years behind, and 60 years behind here is not 60 years behind London. So this is.
It would have been like going back, what, 200 or 300 years?
Yeah, more or less. More or less could be 150 years in London.
Pirate ship docking in.
Yeah. So after working the agriculture, the workers go to make what they say the roots of the Seven Fuentes is like seven water springs will be, but there were seven bars for drinking wine. So they don't drink beer here, they don't drink whiskey, they drink what they have, the alcohol that they have was wine in that moment.
So it's kind of a little homage or a little nod of the cat back to the time it once was.
And seven places where they go to drink the wine and make it like a route, or sometimes they move on three or four, they drink one glass in Sparta, they move talking with the people. And so for me, it's also part of this wine, because they were... this is coming from different part of the town, so could be also part of these seven bars, seven places, because the bars were growers, because here it's very traditional that all the growers had a bar. So it's what they call a huachinche.
You're going to set one up here? Or?
Yeah, so if you go here and you see huachinche, they are producing wine. Bulk wine, so that was they were not bars that selling the wine from other one. They produce those wine, and so this is could be one of part of that story.
Seven deadly sins of the Orotava Valley in one wine. This is awesome, by the way. And so this wine, I think the first vintage I think I tried this was 14. In London. When was the first vintage that Ben
imported
in London?
11.
Yeah, maybe it was earlier, but I know we had it at Marita. The
label,
for some time.
Or because it was the
the old label.
The old label was until 13.
So then 13 maybe was the first one, and then I do remember, and I said this last time, was that shift between I think 15 and 16, where they just. And even now, trying this wine, it's just got this little bit more refined. Like it used to be a wild animal, like it was like wild forest man.
Yeah.
Like it was pretty funky, right? And it's so nice because I think it's still got this kind of the spiciness, the herbal nature. This very unique character that you see in Listan Negro in this wine, but it just has this little bit more fruit and this little bit more finesse that it's
this vintage pure. Also I'm feeling a little bit more fruit in the wines. And what I'm seeing is less greenest since 16, for example, for me 16 was a great vintage. The only thing is that for the people that really didn't like was because sometimes it was a little bit cloudy because it was a vintage very 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 light, but for me it was a great change in Seven Fuentes, and so also important for me is to be complex but also approachable to more type of people. Most of the evolution that I'm seeing in the bottle is. It's great in the last vintage.
I mean, I kind of recommend this wine, like, because I've often, I mean, this is another wine that I've done by the glass a lot in some of my consultancy projects, but also at Aura as well. But often when the first question is, well, what's it like? Of course, I'm like, well, you need to taste it because it's got its own character. But I think for me, I recommend this wine to people who maybe are used to drinking things like Beaujolais, for example, decent, good quality Gamay, or even things like Menthia from Galicia, from the right appellation, like an unoaked, fresher style.
For me, sometimes it's a mix of like Morgon with the Rhone, so it's something.
It's
like
got.
That.
Do you know what? It's got Syrah, but it's more like you know, like I remember some good vintages, not every vintage, but some good vintages from. From Alicante, from what's his name? Navarro.
Bernabé Navarro, yeah, Rafa Bernabé.
But
yeah.
His Ganacha Peluda Cipreses, yeah. Like, I remember some earlier vintages of that, they got a little bit wild towards the end, but there was this herbal spiciness and this crunchiness to that, which
that produces is great. The problem is that he didn't continue, he sold the project, but I am opening some bottles from 13, 12, and the evolution is going very good.
Loved his pet gnats, everything.
No.
I keep saying that Jonathan should be doing the standing row pet gnat because it would be the most hipster one.
For the moment, I have some more plants before the pet gnat. I'm a little bit more classic.
Then you should call it Sete Sins, Seven Sins, Seven Great Varietals. That's a bit tacky,
Aurelian Laert has a seven grapes, or champagne with a seven grapes.
Yeah.
You have how is it, the name? Seven. Seven Cepages. Less seven. Less set.
Yes. So I think Pet Nat could be the way. I love this. Anybody looking for low alcohol, it's 12.5% low alcohol. Spicy, crunchy, it's a bit aromatic, but fruity, delicious, salty wine. This is.
Yeah, this vintage is a little bit more fruity in the nose. Then we will try from the tank the blend of the 19. And see. So now the next one will be a single vineyard. Now I'm returning to 17 vintage. This is El Ciruelo. It's 100% Listan Negro. This is a soil from 480 to 520 meters.
And the plot's just down there, right?
Like, yeah, we go a little bit down to the right, and it's that, and we hear the soil gives more complexity to the wines. Also, I made in different way. I make with all the single vineyards. I normally work with a 100% whole bunch. And I made a one wine making without touching the pump in all the process. So it's normally it's a food trodden during the whole fermentation, and then yes, maceration wet in the cup.
Just by hand, or
this is with feet because it's in concrete.
No, but after the foot stomping, like just to wet the cap.
Normally, I take from the bottom. And then,
watering can.
Yeah.
It's like a regadera, no?
Yeah, regadera, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
To be honest, in the last winters I've seen one easy way, and it's the peristaltic pump for the making that. You can make it with a very low speed, and it's like making that way. So it's exactly the same of wetting, very, very, very soft.
But someone's not going up and down the ladder all the time.
Hmm?
I said someone doesn't have to go up and down the ladder.
Yeah, from 16 and 17 I was doing it that way. And I say, why? We don't try to make it this way, because really, it's exactly the same.
So I had to do that when I did vintage at Commando G with Danny and Fernando, and we used to have to write it down, so it'd be like, ¿Cuánto regaderas? You'd be like, oh, I don't know.
The problem is to go down and go up. And also, when you have to go the 30 meters to there, back down, go up, and then 30 meters. So for making a. So, but just making softer the wetting, and then run off when I consider that. And then 11 months in 500 liter barrels.
So El Ciruelo, and it's 100% Listan Negro.
Yeah. This is
vintage is 17.
17 vintage, yeah. This is a vintage that that was with a higher yield than normally in the appellation. It's something that has that when I harvest, I didn't have a great expectation with the vintage, but then the evolution is being very well in all the wines. Yeah.
It's amazing, this wine. Like, I mean, it already goes into kind of, even though it's okay, I know that there's a little bit of another grape variety in the other wine, but the profile of the wine, you still see the identity of the grape, but it just becomes more serious. The fruit's coming through. Yeah. There's this like lovely, finely grained tannin.
It's a, no,
it feels more, I want to say more Burgundian than the, yeah, the wine
this, before. These were wines from this altitude, the Ciruelo del Esquilón. Normally you feel more the tannins and it's more tannin bottle. Also, one thing that I want to put this wine is due, 17 when I bottle was reductive. Also the 18, and now when you taste, you don't feel that reductive notes. So that is for me is important because now the wine in the same bottle is opening without the.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's got this kind of like black cherry, almost going into like rose petal on the nose. Yeah. It's really pretty, actually.
And I think that still needs a little bit more bottle, for maybe maybe 2 years more for polish all the those tannins. Polish is the word.
Yeah, polish. Yeah, yeah, soften them. But I mean, I love Italian wine, so for me, I'm okay with a bit of tannin.
For me, the tannins is part of the evolution of or having or not evolution, because all people want now to make great wines and start to drink in after bottling. So, but I then want. That in 10 years this wine is alive.
That's what Petnat's for.
No, but but people want the great wine the first day and want a great wine after 10 years. So yeah. Sometimes it's difficult to have both things. So sometimes if you want to open. Yeah, yeah, but that's other thing. Mm. The whites go in one side, and the reds normally needs a structure, needs tannins.
Yeah.
For me, the white what needs is acidity for aging, and the reds also needs acidity, but needs also a structure.
The tannin,
tannins, and also the good thing is that the Listán Negro is not a tannic grape. So I can work in this way, and not because maybe how I work this in other wines, and you can open one bottle in 7-8 years.
Yeah.
Because the tannins.
No, for me, I feel like the structure and the skeleton of the wine, let's say, is built around the acid rather than the tannin. Actually, in this particular wine, obviously the tannin is sort of supportive, but it's definitely a wine all about the acidity level as well. Mm. Not to say that it's over acidic, but I think I don't think that. But it's beautiful, that wine. It's great to try after. I mean, 17.
This is a vintage that is not in the market. As I said, it's not in the market from the seller. Maybe it could be in the retailers and the wine shops. But I open for see also how is the evolution of El Ciruelo with bottle. Now we just bottle the 19. The 19 will be under other wine name. It's a registered name that is.
So are we going to know that now? That's like a surprise to come. Or?
No, it's Las Suertes.
Oh, okay.
It'll be Las Suertes,
okay.
Like the name of the area, and it's was due. There are a lot of offices in mainland Spain or in Spain that they want to have money. And I have when I try to register that, and I receive a. The agreement of the government that Ciruelo is registered, then they put something and they reject it by a company that sells grapes bulk in Murcia. So they don't have a Ciruelo register for wine. And then I made everything by myself. I don't fight. They register later than me. So I make an agreement, I say, okay, for me it's not important, the name, for me much more important, the land and the wine than the name.
Yes, that, I like that. I mean, I had a similar, we'll talk about that off camera, but I had a similar situation. I think, so for those people that want to know more about this wine, obviously El Ciruelo, for 17, 18, and then from 19 it's called Las Suertes.
Yes, okay. After 19 it will be Las Suertes, yeah.
Yeah. Our cameraman is actually just pouring himself an extra wine over there, which I've got my eye on. But that's the Los Pasitos. So maybe that's a nice closing wine for us. Yeah.
Okay, so bonus track.
He's silent, but he's menacing behind the camera.
Yeah.
A troublemaker that may appear on another episode of Juice Wine Podcast. We'll reveal when we see his face.
Yeah.
But so I guess, I mean, I know we're about to talk about the next wine that we're about to try, but I guess the things that I'm thinking about as well is just where do you see the future? Like, is there anything that hasn't already happened? Like, is there anything that you think would be interesting for our listeners to hear about? Like, what's your vision in terms of for the island, for Suertes del Marqués?
For me, my more or less my vision for Maicela is clear. I want to try to work my vineyards. Also, I'm planting new vineyards. I'm recovering some grapes, planting different parts, and then for me my vision and what I really want to have in the future is that Canary Island could be really destination for the wine people. Still, all of you, the professionals, the very professional, are coming for visit because you are here, you know, because that is. But still, when you go to the towns from here, you see where are the wine bars, where are the
it's really difficult to find the good wines, and also it's easy to find a lot of rubbish wine.
That's,
to be honest,
that's the problem. Yeah. And so, so for me, still you notice that it's not a serious wine region because you still don't have the places for the wine people to go and have a wine. To open bottles, because for me the most important thing for my knowledge, for my learning, is to drink wine. To drink wine, not from me, for the neighbor. It's from drink from everywhere, and so I would like to go to a wine bar that has a good selection of Jura, Ribera Sacra, or Barolo, everything, and you don't find in the island, and then I know that there will be something good for the wines from here, for attracting, and also you as a wine consumer, you want to try wines, but after 1 week, maybe you want to open a finish of the night, one good bottle of other things, and share with the growers, so I think there will be something that we have to improve, because also I'm seeing that there are a lot of appellations that want to make the wine route here, and I said, which wine route are you going to do? What are you going to show? The sellers still has to improve for having to attend the people. If not, the perception outside, you are going to destroy with because many sellers are not preparing yet. They are not. There are around 200 sellers in Canary Island, but still, I think that I like no more than 15, 20 sellers at this moment, and I think that we have to increase that.
I'm talking as a consumer, not as a
producer.
Yeah, no, I understand. I think you're right, though. I mean, it's definitely my feeling, and this is why, I mean, I'm here 2 years later and there isn't anybody new still, you know, and I think there are a couple, yourself included, of, like, amazing, if not world-renowned, if not recognised wineries. You know, the wines that you produce, that... there are a couple of other producers in the Canary Islands that are just, you know, they stand up to the best wines of the world. They're getting recognised by critics and everything else. But it is kind of shocking to me when I come here and I see these incredible vineyards, like these pieces of history, and you just think, why aren't more people coming here to make wine? Or why is there not more interesting wine being made here? And like any movement, I mean, all of the regions now that are very prominent and on all of the restaurant wine lists, I mean, look at what happened in Beaujolais. I mean, that's decades of many producers working in a particular way, and I think you're right, there's not enough people.
There are a lot of producers, a lot of people that people from Japan going to Jura to make wine.
Oh, Ken, from, you're talking about Miwa, Kenjiro, yeah, oh my god, my wine Miro. Hero. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So people, yeah, people from Australia, people from everywhere are going, and will be good if start to come also people from outside. Obviously, also the young people, local young people, that for me, the best thing that has Canary Island now are the new generation of producers. There are some ones that are being started to well now, like Carmelo and Pablo Matallana, so new producer, but also
Victoria Torres. No, she's already like, established.
It's like
established.
Me, so we are not young, but like these people that are down 30. And also the son of Juan Jesus from Iñatigo, that is, has established Sela, that he worked in the Martino, he worked the last 6 months, and he has a very open mind and will be good for the wines here when he start to carry also that cellar and make his personal project. So I think that there will be a new generation that is going to make great things. But then I think that the old school from here, people are not going to change. So
well, one day I'll move to Taganana.
Yeah.
That, have a half hectare of wine and make a third of a barrel of wine.
yeah.
And give you a bottle and send some bottles to my parents, and then the bottles will be gone because I'll drink the rest of the year.
You have that house. I like that house we saw. The way that will be the amazing one.
That's the future. But I mean. So we should finish talking about this wine. So the wine now is
Los Pasitos. This is
2019.
Also the new vintage. This is a Baboso Negro. This is also a single vineyard from the property.
So Baboso Negro is the grape variety for people.
Yeah, it's related to the Alfogeiro Preto in Dao, for example, with or Brunal in Salamanca. So there are a few, but again, mutations are different, and this is for me is an important wine because I discover how this island the potential that has for making the style of wine that you want. The Baboso Negro was one grape that started to have a great develop in the island in 2000. Came from El Hierro Island and started to be planted also here because it's a grape that has a lot of acidity. So allowed that you can write more and continue keeping acidity. But the problem is that me as a consumer, I felt that a little bit boring because for me it's too deep, a lot of color, a lot of, and I didn't enjoy. That's the Baboso Negro is a very small bunch that also the ripeness is a short cycle and also is very sensible to the botrytis, so it's very difficult to have a lot of quantity from so it's very low yield, and the thing is that I in the 16 you know that we make a little bit I start to be in charge of the winemaking, and we start to think if I taste and for me it's ripe, why we have to wait to have more alcohol? So it's ripe now. So let's make the wine and see what happened. And happened that with 12 degrees of alcohol has a great acidity, a lot of freshness. For me, the most important thing is the freshness that we have, and very enjoyable wine for drink. It's a new grape, a new discovery in this grape, and also happened with the Bejarano Negro, the one that you told, that happened the same grape that has a lot of acidity, a lot of potential. What the people say aquí, that is a high potential for winemaking, but in doing much we're harvesting 3-4 weeks earlier than other people will do normally. So maybe in Baboso less, because Baboso is a grape that that in 2 weeks maybe can increase 3 degrees of alcohol very fast. So, that 1.5 a week make a totally different wine. Then I work in most of the wines with whole bunch, and I like to drink this wine.
It's delicious. It's very drinkable. I mean, our cameraman has had two glasses of that whilst we're just sipping away here.
And I think it's a great vintage, the 19.
So thanks everybody for tuning in, staying with us. Obviously quite a few wines that we've got through today, so I'll post the list of all of the wines. For those that are in the UK, for the wine trade people, it's all through Indigo Wine.
Yeah.
In Germany, there's a few different avenues that you can go down.
Yeah, so it's Ravensburg and Biniverica. Biniverica more in the area of Karlsruhe, Frankfurt, and Ravensburg that is located in Hamburg.
Yeah, so Berliners, I think, are buying maybe both of them.
Yes, the bottom is north and center.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, there are a number of wine shops and restaurants for the Berliners, because we've got a big base in Berlin. You can come to Aura, there's lots of them there. Yeah. Or the Michelberger too. In London, I know Morito, Morrow, there's a number of restaurants. Noble Rot, there's an interesting Noble Rot magazine as well, that's worth mentioning. But yeah, and thank you very much.
Thanks.
Drink more volcanic wine, and until next time. We always do a cheers at the end as well.
Cheers. We still have that one.